about whatsoever.
Maybe in the way that we can't fathom plant intelligence, machines one day will look at us and have no idea whether or not we're intelligent because our abilities are opaque to them.
Yeah, we'll be like some sort of slime mold, clever behavior in some sense, but not what you would call intelligent.
You know, I don't know if we can say that anymore. I have more respect now for a slime mold. It may be more intelligent than you realize.
I'm not going to comment, but I hope I haven't offended the slime molds who might be listening.
So we've gone from dolphins and animals to plants to machines, really animal, vegetable, and mineral, I guess,
yes.
and applied the idea of intelligence to all three groups. And if anything, our definition of intelligence is murkier than when this conversation began.
It is remarkable because you know that if we were having this discussion 100, 200 years ago, there would be absolutely no question that the only intelligence was Homo sapiens intelligence. We were suffering from tunnel vision, and that vision seems to be getting broader all the time.
But one thing we do know is that there is no question that our production team, at least, has smarts, thanks to Gary Niederhoff and Barbara Vance.
And also thanks to Google and Rena Shulsky-David and Sammy David and the NASA Astrobiology Institute. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, and a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to You Think You're So Smart. There's more Big Picture Science on iTunes and through the link on our website. And while you're online, you might find and download our Big Picture Science app. It's on iTunes, Android, and Windows 8.
And if you're a podcast listener, but you prefer over-the-air radio because you know you have to be smart to build a radio, well, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like this show.
We are Pact 1128 from Dearborn. You are listening to WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves.
The winter 2016 semester at Henry Ford College begins January 11. Registration is currently open and available at hfcc.edu/webadvisor. Take advantage of HFC's tuition freeze guarantee. HFC also guarantees that no classes will be canceled throughout the semester for students who have registered and paid their tuition. Whether you're a recent high school graduate, military veteran, or wishes to earn your college degree, or professional seeking career training, HFC offers the resources to help you succeed. For further information about registering for the winter 2016 semester at HFC, contact the Office of Registration and Records, located in the Welcome Center, at 313-845-6403, or online at enrollmentservices@hfcc.edu. The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Michael Geldmacher. Michael has a long list of police-related schools to his credit. He is presently the director of security for Botsford Hospital. Yeah, he was operations manager for a major security alarm company. He has been a loss prevention manager and a police officer for the Wayne County Sheriff's Department, where he worked as an undercover narcotics officer and a helicopter pilot. He has also owned his own private investigations firm. He has been awarded 3 department citations, one of which was the Citation of Valor, the Wayne County Board of Commissioners commendation, and the U.S. Justice Department commendation. Michael is also a member of the Michigan chapter of the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON. His interest in the UFO phenomenon began with his own personal multi-witness close encounter sighting when he was 20 years old. And he has been interviewed on numerous radio and TV shows. And we are happy to have him with us on the line today. Michael Geldmacher, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Dave. It's nice to be here.
I appreciate you coming on. I know I've seen you at the MUFON meetings in Flint, Michigan, which mm-hmm. we have every other month except during the summer. And I'm terrible with putting names to faces, but you reminded me of what you looked like, so now I know who I'm talking to.
hard to miss.
Hard to miss, huh? Okay. Yeah. Well, at any rate, you have, like there was in the introduction, a long list of police schools to your credit, and worked in police and law enforcement pretty much all your life, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been about a 40-year run.
40-year run.
I'm telling my age, I guess.
Yeah, and I always tell people, you do the math, right?
Yep, there you go.
I had my sighting in 62 when I was 14. Now you do the math.
Yeah.
So let's begin with that sighting of yours. When did this happen and what happened?
Well, it was in 1967. A friend of mine and his new wife and me and my new wife had gone up to the Alpena area. We were going to stay at a cottage on Beaver Lake. And, pardon me?
No, go ahead.
Oh, I thought I heard you asking a question.
Nope.
We arrived in the late evening, and I got the brilliant idea of going out looking for bears in a garbage dump. The girls didn't want to go. So my friend and I took off, and we went down. There was at that time a local garbage dump on Worth Road, just a little bit, a few miles east of M-65. And it was only a few miles away from the Air Force base there.
Mm.
While we were watching the bears, some bears did come out, and we were watching them. My friend saw this, what appeared to be a star. It was just a little dot of light going across the sky, probably about 90 degrees up. And while we were watching it, it was moving pretty fast. And back then, Sputnik had been the big talk and everything. So we were wondering if it was a satellite or something. And mm-hmm. all of a sudden, it reversed like it was on a clothesline. It just went back in the opposite direction without a stop or anything. It was just so then that just really drew our curiosity, and we watched it for a little while longer, and then it started a series of zigzagging flight pattern, and we couldn't figure that out, and yet it's still far enough away we thought it was a star. So we were kind of curious, and by this time we're out of the pickup truck now, standing up on the roof trying to get a good look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend had a pretty powerful spotlight with him, so he started flashing a SOS signal in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing you know, this thing is starting to come in our direction and over top of us.
It got
over top of us, it stopped, and you know, we watched it for a few minutes, and then all of a sudden we realized it was getting bigger. And it got to the point where we were eventually able to light it up with the spotlight. And we figured based, he worked for General Electric at the time. We figured based on the power of that spotlight, it might have been about 3,500, no more than 3,500 feet away from us. And there was no noise. And so we were trying to figure that out. And not quite sure whether to run or what to do when all of a sudden a light came down on us.
Okay,
this light was,
at this point,
the closest I could describe it is fluorescent, but it wasn't really fluorescent. That's just the closest thing I know to it. And it had a tight circle around the pickup truck. It wasn't like it was a broad searchlight. It was a very tight circle. Well, that was our cue. We jumped off the truck and got in and took off. We drove down to this little village called Spratt, which is at M65 and Worth Road, and there's a payphone in the parking lot there of a bar.
Okay, let me interrupt you if I may, Mike.
Yep.
At this point, when you're on the top of the truck, first of all, what prompted your buddy to do the SOS signal?
Just fooling around. You know, we're 20-year-old kids, nothing to do. You know, he's just fooling around.
And when you're standing on top of the truck and you say it was how high above you?
Well, the spotlight could reach out about 3,500 feet, so we know it was less than that.
Okay. So what was the shape of this object?
It was discs, the typical disc shape that
really?
You mostly associate with the normal UFO.
Was it rotating or no?
It didn't appear to be rotating. It was stationary.
Did it have any colored lights on it?
No colored lights.
See,
no lights whatsoever.
I'm doing my UFO investigator trick right now. So
okay.
So go ahead now. Say you go to the payphone.
Yeah, we called the state police, and I found out later they thought we were just a couple of drunk kids calling in. But we told them what we saw, and they didn't have any cars available immediately in the area, so they sent a conservation officer out, and when he arrived, we showed him that the thing was still hanging over the garbage dump, and we could see it from that payphone. So we pointed it out to the conservation officer, and he radioed back in that no, we weren't a couple of drunk kids, that he was seeing it too. So at that point, they called around to, Alpena, I believe it was Taos and Gaylord or Grayling to see if anybody had anything on radar. So basically they were triangulating the area.
Right.
And none of them were reporting anything on radar at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, it didn't take off real fast. It just kind of eased off, and then all of a sudden it was just out of sight. We went home not knowing what to expect, and the next morning, state police were knocking on the door of the cottage, asked us to, well, it was more or less demanded. It was more more like we were being taken in. They wanted us in at the Air Force Base in Alpena.
Oh, boy.
And once we got in there, we were questioned by officials on what we saw. And there was a lot of documentation done, some drawings done, and they let us go. And a few months later, we got a package from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, who wanted us to fill out a manual's worth of information and draw some pictures, and we did that. And recently, through MUFON, when I found out there is a Project Blue Book and it was accessible and everything, I actually went in there and was able to look up our case.
Oh, it was in Project Blue Book?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
So they basically, they tried to debunk it, but they technically didn't debunk it. They just made a statement in there that we didn't supply them enough information, which wasn't true. If you read the whole report, they kind of blew it off. But we gave them everything they wanted, and we're willing to give them anything else they asked for if we had an answer for it.
Yeah. But there was a police officer at the time that witnessed this as well.
A conservation officer.
Officer. Hmm. So, do you know if they, when I say they, I mean the Air Force Base or anyone in authority interviewed or, talked to the conservation officer? Or was the conservation officer's testimony in Project Blue Book?
There was no mention of him.
Really?
In Project Blue Book. At the time, I never really thought about the conservation officer and had no idea how deep an investigation would go like that. And now, of course, learning what I know today, you kind of know why they didn't dig into it too deep. They just wanted to debunk it and get rid of it.
Right. They would sooner have the testimony of a couple of 20-year-olds who were probably out there boozing it up as opposed to that of a conservation officer. Do I get this straight?
Yep, that's what I believe today.
Yeah? Yeah, well, it was like in my setting, I was 14. Of course, my parents were grown, But
were they with you when you saw it?
Oh yeah. My sister was like 17, and my parents were in their late 30s, early 40s, and this was in Detroit, Michigan, heavily populated area, And the authorities said, "Oh, those silly people just saw the Northern Lights." Well, they weren't telling us because we saw it. They were telling you who did not see it.
Mm-hmm.
So who are you going to believe? So what did, in Project Blue Book, what kind of an explanation, if any, did they assign, and I say assign, to your sighting?
Well, that's the interesting part. They didn't validate it or debunk it, really. They just ended the investigation stating that they had requested more information from us and that we didn't respond.
Oh, which you say is not true.
Which is not true. We were so excited when we got the packet from Wright Patterson to fill out, because we really thought somebody was going to look into this and we'd have something to work with. And we sent that back, and we never heard anything from anybody. We were waiting to try and tell our story.
Yeah. Nobody really wanted. Well, I guess Wright Patterson wanted to hear it, but nobody ever told you or your buddy, keep quiet about this. You saw a weather balloon or whatever.
Nope, they didn't try and guide us into anything like that. They asked all the questions and gave us no answers about anything.
Mm.
They acted like they were trying to get to the bottom of it, and they didn't know, so they needed our answers, and then they just blew us off, which was easy to do with us at that time, as young as we were.
Right. Well, age really doesn't have much to do with it. You see something, you saw it, especially you got two people, and more. In your case,
yep,
at least three, right?
No, there was two of us.
No, but I mean then conservation officer.
Yes, absolutely. But what I was referring to was at that age, and then you got to remember, back in that period of time, there was so much respect and trust in law enforcement and government.
Mm-hmm.
You just didn't question them.
Right.
You were kind of almost intimidated by them. So, we weren't brave enough, I guess, to question them or push them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I remember in my case, after hearing this Northern Lights explanation, I told my mother, that wasn't the Northern Lights. As a kid, I'd seen the Northern Lights in pictures and movies, and I knew what they looked like. And these were round, structured lights, of various colors. And she says, well, If they say it was the Northern Lights, then it was the Northern Lights. Now, I don't know if that's just to pacify the kid, or or if she had that much faith in the powers that be. Probably a bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but...
Well, what, what's interesting is when I was leafing through Project Blue Book, there's an entry in there on a date very close to our date, and I don't off the top of my head remember what those specific dates are, but it was in within 2 or 3 days, a radar operator in the Upper Peninsula had reported multiple objects of unknown origin on his radar. And if I remember correctly, he reported them 70 miles south. Well, if you look at where he was at in the Upper Peninsula and then go south, it's almost at the Alpena area.
Mm.
So it's kind of interesting that sometime within that same close time frame, a radar operator had spotted unidentified objects flying around.
You say objects?
Yes.
Okay. So maybe this was just one of several objects at that time.
It could have been. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wonder because sometimes you know you get radar confirmation. Other times, they really can't see them on the radar, and then of course other times they see them on radar, but those that evidence seems to fall through the cracks. So.
Mm-hmm.
So you wonder. So I need to take a quick break just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, 89.3 FM on your radio, and WHFR.FM on your computer. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell. We're speaking with Michael Geldmacher, who is a... law enforcement officer and a UFO researcher. And I also wanted to take this opportunity to remind you once again about the Swamp Gas Conference that's going on March 19th next year. Well, this year, okay. This is aired in January. So, yeah, we're into a new year. Happy New Year to everyone. I hope you had a great holiday season. But back to this Swamp Gas Conference. And, yeah, this is going to be held in Ann Arbor, Michigan, at the Wyndham Garden Hotel, Ann Arbor, celebrating the 50th anniversary of the now-famous Hillsdale Ann Arbor UFO sightings, the ones that J. Allen Hynek came out with Project Blue Book and said, they just saw a little swamp gas. So... yeah, ufologists have made fun of that swamp gas comment ever since then. But there are going to be a lot of good speakers there during the day, and like Peter Robbins, who is the co-author of Left at East Gate, the story of the Rendlesham Forest UFO incident, as well as Grant Cameron of presidentialufos.com, and other speakers. So it's going to be one great day, and so check into that. Go to swampgasufo.com, swampgasufo.com, and check out the accommodations, the tickets for the Swamp Gas Conference that Michigan MUFON is putting on March 19th. And I want to remind you that MUFON is a nonprofit organization, the largest civilian organization in the world that dedicated to the scientific study of the UFO phenomena. So that's that, and let's get back to Mr. Michael Geldmacher. We're talking about his sighting back when he was, what was it, 1967, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In Michigan. Now, you you mentioned to me that later on something, I don't know why, but tell us why, you went and had a hypnosis session involving this sighting. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, that's correct. I actually went to do some past life regression.
Ah.
I would say within the last 10 years, I really got interested in the UFO phenomena and then the whole spiritual aspect that goes with it. And I was curious. And that sighting had always bothered me because I always wondered, was it something man-made that they're just testing, or was it actually a UFO?
Mm.
When I had the reading, I was actually taken back to that day and have remembrance of actually having contact.
Mm.
And an interesting question came up was did you have any loss of time in that period? And I consciously didn't have any loss of time because there's nothing to measure time against. If our time was locked out, you know, we had no timelines to be anywhere. We had no cell phones that we were carrying back and then. It was just, we didn't know how long we were there.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, through this regression and what I spoke of with the therapist, was it lasted about 40 minutes.
Okay. Now, you were married at the time, right?
Yes.
And you left, both of you married, you left your wives to go hunt for bears, bear
yep.
sighting. And anyway, got a little bit more than you bargained for.
Mm-hmm.
And when you got back, did your wife say, where have you been? You've been gone so long? What? Anything
well,
to indicate?
They didn't ask us where we've been. They knew we were going to look for bears. We came back all excited, telling them what we had seen.
Mm.
And the length of time that we were gone wasn't unusual.
Okay.
Because the sighting occurred within moments of us getting there. So it wouldn't have been unusual to be gone for an hour, hour and a half to go out on a little adventure like that.
Okay.
So we never had any clue that anything was unusual at that time.
All right. So then you have the hypnosis session, and you find out you have missing time. What happened in that interim?
Well, you know, I saw what I could see was that a short gray had come out of the craft, taken me by the hand. Walked me inside, and I was actually able to see the control room. It was a friendly visit. I don't remember seeing too much more than that. I can remember now coming back to the truck, and my friend asked me where I've been.
Oh, your friend did not go with you?
No.
Ah.
Okay. However, that was, you know, consciously, that was never asked. You know, that must have been blocked from our memory back at that time because that was never even part of a conversation. But that's what I remember after the regression, coming back to the truck and him asking me where I've been.
Okay, did you consciously remember him asking you where you had been?
No. That thought never crossed my mind until the regression.
Have you spoken to your buddy since then?
Oh, not over the last 30 years or so.
Oh, my. But after the event, of course, within a reasonable amount of time, you spoke to him. And what was the banter about the incident?
Well, it was just the excitement of, you know, what I described to you. And when those manuals came from Wright-Patterson, we got together to fill them out because we were really interested in making sure we had accurate information. You know, we wanted to do a good job, and we really wanted to find out what happened, and we were hoping to establish some credibility with them in a rapport so that we could get information.
Mm-hmm.
So we discussed it a few times, and then at a certain point, we just kind of gave up, and then it faded off into being the butt of everybody's joke, so to speak, you know, and they said, oh, yeah, there's the crazy guys that saw the UFO.
Yeah, I hear you. So you pretty much stop talking about it, is that it?
Yep.
Yeah.
I used to talk about it, at, you know, as I got older and I got into our hunting camp,
mm-hmm.
Which my dad was also a police officer, and the hunting camp up there in Alpena was all police officers, and I would talk about it up there, And they all thought I was crazy and would make jokes about it. But I was always, you know, it's funny because people would always ask me what I saw, but then they'd tell me I was nuts.
They wanted to know, huh?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. But was this in a group that they would ask you and talk to you about it? Were you in a group of several guys?
It was always in a group. Yeah. And it was always in a, you know, a jovial atmosphere. And
right.
It was always in a session where, you know, they probably wanted to make jokes about it and be funny in front of everybody. But it was interesting because one of the members of the hunting club was a scout car partner of my dad's.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the biggest one who was always bashing me, jokingly.
Mm.
But several years later, when he got older and left the club and was kind of in his retirement mode, we were having a discussion one day, and he apologized to teasing me so much. And I said, well, why are you apologizing to him? And he says, well, because I saw a UFO, too. So what he described to me was he was driving down M-65, which is only a you know, it was right in the same area, but it was noon, and he said this disc-shaped craft came over the top of his car, flew out in front of him at about windshield level for a few hundred feet or more. I mean, you know, you're traveling 50 miles an hour for a few seconds, I guess would be the best way to describe it, and then all of a sudden it just shot straight up in the air and was gone.
Wow.
And he never admitted it to anybody because he saw how much I was being teased.
Right, right. And that's why I asked if it was always in a group of people, because you get a group of people and they don't know, you know, maybe some of them, half of them have had experience or know of someone that they trust who has had an experience. But they don't want to say anything for fear that they will be ridiculed as well. So you don't get them in a group. You talk to them separately and tell them your story, and you'll find that 4 out of 5 of them are going to have a story for you.
Yep.
You know, if it's on a one-to-one basis.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I know my sister was afraid to tell anybody about our experience, and I told her that. I says, you tell 10 people separately, and 4 out of 5 of them are going to have a story for you.
Mm-hmm.
And she came back to me later and said, you're right. I did that, and you're right. You know, they had experience, or they know of someone who had an experience. So,
and it's a lot more fun in today's world because more people are aware. There's more curiosity about it. There's more openness about it, so
right.
It's a lot easier to tell the stories and get acceptance.
Right, right. That's right. And you also had another sighting while working as a helicopter pilot. And can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, I think that's at the point where things really got validated for me, at least in the back of my head.
Hmm.
At one point in my career, I was assigned to the aviation unit as a helicopter pilot. And my partner and I were on patrol one night, 9:30, 10:30 o'clock at night. We were about 5.5 miles, 6 miles outside of Metro Airport control zone. And we got a radio run from the city of Inkster saying that there was a low-flying aircraft. The neighbors were calling in, complaining about it, wanted us to check it out. Well, we were approaching the area from the north and basically coming down like Beach Daily Road towards Michigan Avenue. And I couldn't really see anything. And I was about to call off, and I decided to lower the helicopter down because if there is an airplane flying below you at night, you might not see it or see its lights in the city lights. So I got down low kind of at treetops to see what I could see, and I could see a dark object kind of hovering stationary out over the area right at Michigan and Beach Daily. And I decided to approach it slowly and see what I could see if we could light it up with our searchlight. And as I was approaching, I called Metro Tower to ask them if they had anything on radar, because he would have been at that point right on the 5-mile radius, and you're supposed to be in contact with the tower. Well, they told me they didn't have anything. And I advised them I had something in sight, but it might be below their radar because it was pretty low to the ground. I'd let them know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as we approached it, it went from where we saw it at a speed I can only describe as transporting. I mean, it just moved from where we had it at Michigan Beach Daily to about 5,000 feet up above Metro Tower. So I called the tower back, and I said that the object was now 5,000 feet straight up. I said, do you have it on radar now? And they said, no, there's nothing on radar. And then they asked me, do you want a report? And I just said, no. And, you know, we closed our run and flew off. And the reason I said no is back in those days, that would have been in the mid-70s. If you started reporting as a pilot that you saw UFOs, you were grounded the next day and, you know, going through psychological tests and everything else. And I obviously didn't want to deal with that. But it was very obvious that that was not a man-made craft. There's nothing that can move like that.
Right. Yeah, that reminds me of this scene from Close Encounters.
Mm-hmm.
The movie, you know?
Yep.
They saw it on, the pilot saw this thing, and do you want to report? No, we don't want to report one of those.
and that's what I was thinking of. I actually got chills when they said that, because it reminded me of the movies.
Really?
Yeah. So that was a real eye-opener for me, even though the other one, the first one, was more dramatic, but that was just like, okay, well, two is not coincidence.
Right.
You know, for one person to witness. So.
Right. Well, do you have any inclination that you may have been abducted since then?
No.
Or any kind of contact since then?
No, I don't have any feelings like that. I haven't been able to find anything like that through, you know, any, because I've had a second past life regression and nothing like that has ever come up. You know, it's something I keep searching for.
Right. So you have never been an investigator for MUFON, right?
No, I haven't. Still a working guy. I just didn't feel like I could devote enough time to it to do the right job if I got a case, because I'm pretty tied up here. But the interest is there, and I'm sure as soon as I do pull the pin and retire, I will get heavily involved.
Well, I'm going to have to talk to you after the show or at next meeting or something like that and try to recruit you. Because it's a matter of a couple phone calls, you know, and talk to them for a few minutes and then jot down your feelings on it. That's it. But unless it gets, you know, you have physical evidence, and then you go out there and then it gets exciting. You know, but at any rate, so okay, so you've talked to this one person who confided in you that he had a close encounter as well. And that was a police officer?
A retired police officer, yes.
Yeah, of course, they got to wait till they're retired to tell you about this, right?
Absolutely.
Right. What do they got to lose then, right?
Yeah.
So anyone else within law enforcement has confided in you?
Nobody that's confided in me, but obviously my partner on the a helicopter experience, he witnessed the same thing, but unfortunately he's passed away now, so he can't he can't testify himself.
Yeah. So have you garnered any new information about UFOs as a MUFON member?
Well, every time I go to a MUFON meeting, and everything that I hear there is basically new to me, and that's what's been so interesting for me, is listening to the speakers. It's you know, I'm trying to absorb it all, and I actually think I'm past the point of getting excited about trying to find out if there are UFOs. I'm more, what are they about? Because I'm already convinced that you know, they do exist. You know, I have my own proof of that. So it's just, you know, why are they here? Where are they going from here? You know, it's kind of in that stage for me.
Right.
And there's some pretty good information out there, especially like through Dr. Stephen Greer, some of the work that he's doing. It's interesting listening to his information that's coming out.
Right, right, that's right. I need to take one more break to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves, and that's 89.3 FM on your radio. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I am David Twitchell, and we're speaking with a researcher and UFO and abductee, sighting, had a sighting, and feels that he has been abducted, at least for 40 minutes, Mr. Michael Geldmacher. And let's see, I'm going to ask you something about, I'm going to ask you what you feel their agenda is from your investigations and research.
What, you know, my own personal belief is that the agenda is friendly.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a lot of noise out there trying to make E.T. or the aliens, whatever, you know, the popular word for them is today, that they want to take over the Earth.
And, mm-hmm.
But they could have done that a long time ago.
Yeah.
They don't need to play around with us.
That's
they have the technology to get here from 200 million light years away. They certainly could take whatever they want from here.
Right.
I believe that they've been here on the planet way before we were even roaming around.
You think?
Oh, yeah. One of the programs that I am an avid listener to is Ancient Aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the information that comes out of there, it just absolutely makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be another program or two getting into all of that stuff, but I think there's things going on out there that we don't understand yet, and that whatever their agenda is, it's friendly. They're not here to hurt us.
Yeah, I would think so. I'm often asked that question, and I say, which ones are you talking about? You know, I think they're benevolent. Beings and malevolent beings and indifferent beings, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just like on the Earth, different type of people.
And that would make sense. If there's a whole community out there in the universe, it probably is as diverse as we are here. And, you know, thank God we haven't been attacked or anything like that.
All right.
But.
All right. And you're talking about... your buddy using a flashlight to signal SOS back in when you had your sighting. I've heard of that many times where people will flash a flashlight on and it seems to signal them. It draws them in. They can see that. And they respond to it. And next thing you know, boom, they find themselves inside the ship or they find themselves 4 hours later. Being conscious 4 hours later with mm-hmm. missing time. And hypnosis usually brings out the fact that they had been abducted. And but you feel your abduction, there was no examination, physical examination that you recall?
No, and that's, I don't believe it was an abduction and never haven't referred to it as that.
Mm-hmm. Well, they took you aboard.
Right, they escorted me aboard. I wasn't taken against my will.
Hmm.
I apparently went voluntarily, most likely out of curiosity.
Hmm.
And from what I've learned, even from some of our local members, I believe that if they contact you, there is a connection there. I don't think they contact people randomly.
Hmm.
So there was some reason for that connection.
Well, you're talking about seeking hypnosis for the purpose of past lives. Now, many abductees, experiencers, contactees, whatever you want to call them, they have stated that they found that they were told by their captors or the beings that have contacted them that they, before they came into this physical being on Earth, they were told, they volunteered to come and be part of this experience with the beings, to be contactees with them. Do you feel that that may be the case, or did you find that out during your regression session?
No. I haven't been fortunate enough yet to get into any part of memory, from a former life or in between lives, as what's talked about. There are people out there that will describe how a soul goes from one life to another life, and then there's that in between period. I haven't been able to see that yet, but in talking to some extremely credible people, one of them right in our backyard, Landy Mellis, you can really appreciate what she has to say, and it's helped me not be afraid of it and really wanting to get into it after reading some of her materials and talking to her personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, Landy Mellis, MUFON member, she's been on this show, and David K. Wood, passed now, but good friend. And they wrote the book together, The Other Sky.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I'm talking about. In it, he said that, first he considered it an abduction and a violation. And he remembered his abductions consciously. And finally he said, "Who gave you the permission to do this to me?" And they said, "You did." What? And then they showed him the fact, like a little movie, but it was a memory, of him agreeing to come to Earth and be part of this abduction experience or contactee experience.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, he called himself an experiencer. So yeah, that's what I was getting at. But if you if you had the hypnosis session for the purpose of past lives, did you discover any past lives?
I did discover a past life,
mm-hmm.
Here, nothing in between lives, but
okay.
Actually a couple different eras, one going back to like the mid-1800s as a Native American, and then there's another period. I haven't figured out the period yet, but it was more of that medieval flavor. So it would be way back in time somewhere.
Mm. So this may be getting off topic now, but this is also interesting, past lives, now that we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
volunteering to come to Earth to be part of this experience. What did you learn about a past life?
Well, it appears that in the two past lives that I was able to see so far, in both instances, I was involved in some form of protection. Specifically, I'm pretty sure that I was part of the Hopi tribe out west. I would have been an adult in around the 1840s, and I was kind of the one that looked after the camp and helped move the camp and protected the women and children when guys were off hunting. The rest of the tribe was off hunting and stuff like that. So that was, and I remember one time where I had to get them from one spot to another up into the cave dwellings and get them through a group of the bad guys. I don't know what else to call them at this point, because there was a group there that was no good, and I had to get them around and in. That was kind of an interesting thing to experience in a past life regression.
Really? Were the bad guys Native Americans as well, or were they the white man come over to push them out?
No, that was other Native Americans. It was another Indian tribe.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you know.
The Hopis were kind of a peaceful group, you know,
right.
Gardeners and that, and the other tribes liked to pick on them.
Yeah, because they were peaceful.
Yeah.
The bullies like to pick on the peaceful ones.
Yep.
Yeah. The Hopi Indian were great believers in the star people.
Mm-hmm.
And star gates to other dimensions. And you weren't able to see any of that connection, were you?
No. You know, not that I can remember. I need to get back for some more work with it. It's just, again, it's time.
Mm-hmm.
Having the time to devote to it, it gets a little rough, but I am seeking that out. I mean, it's an interesting area to get into.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes so much sense out of a lot of things, a lot of mysteries of the earth kind of get solved when you see what was really going on back then.
That's right. That's right. And if we, I think if we used a lot more of their methods, a few less scientific methods, and a few more ancient methods, we'd learn a lot more, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Just the whole concept of believing in a spirit guide and, having people within that you can relate to and talk to. And it's a deep subject and extremely interesting. And there's some proofs out there of how it happens. And, you know, there's proof on people having past lives. I don't remember the name of the one guy who interviewed all these children around 3-4 years old, and they could describe themselves in a different lifetime.
Right.
And there's no way they could have created those thoughts. They were too young to do that. So.
Right. Well, people say, oh, that's children's imagination and everything. But a lot of kids will come up with facts and figures and dates and names that they couldn't possibly have imagined. And when you check them out, you find that these people existed and, you know, these incidents did occur. And
mm-hmm.
There's a show, I forget where it is now on TV, The Ghost in My Child. Have you ever seen that?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I think they're on hiatus now, but I think they will come back because it's very interesting. They have different cases of children remembering past lives and not just, you know, something that, you know, a lot of talk, but things that you can check out, and they do check them out.
Mm-hmm.
And these facts and you know, these people that they have described and named did exist and died the way the child says that they died.
Yep.
And lived the way the kid said that they lived, too.
Yep.
So, just amazing.
I imagine if there were people listening to this conversation, you can imagine what they'd be wondering if they haven't really gotten into this. But when you really start to study it and read about it and listen to other people who are true experiencers, people who have lived it,
mm-hmm.
It's real.
Yes. You may have heard of the book Soul Survivor.
Yes.
S-O-U-L, Soul Survivor.
This, mm-hmm.
The kid was amazing how the facts and figures that he came up with as a small child, and they checked them all out, and the father was a total skeptic on this. Set out to, and this is usually happens with UFO investigators. Happen with J. Allen Hynek. You're so skeptical about a subject, he sets out to investigate to disprove it. And the fact that he's investigating, all the information they gather turns around and proves it from him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happened to Hynek. He even got a bit part in that movie, Close Encounters. So, yeah, that movie, Close Encounters, they took several cases that actually happened involving UFOs and built a movie around it, you know, so.
Well, you know, going back to the ancient alien things, when you start looking at drawings on cave walls from 10,000 years ago where they're drawing flying craft in fire, there's no way they could imagine that.
Right.
You know, right. So when you logically think about this stuff, it's worth exploring.
Oh,
you
yeah.
can't just debunk it.
Right. And they say, you know, they some of these cave drawings, what are they called? Glyphs. Petroglyphs? Is that mm-hmm. it? Okay.
I think it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And pictures of a humanoid figure with a big helmet type thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then, okay, so they wear these, the natives in that area wear these helmets when they do their ceremonial dance. Well, they say that's what it's all about. It's just the ceremonial masks. Where did they get the idea for those masks? Why do they wear those masks?
Mm-hmm.
Is it because they saw someone or something with those masks on? And they all talk about the star people, people coming down from the sky.
Yep.
Promising them they will return.
So. Well, all you have to do is look at how much scientific evidence, quote unquote, that we've had through our younger lives and see how much of that has changed today to fit the new information that we're learning every
mm-hmm.
day.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep debunking ourselves. The old information isn't true anymore.
Right.
And you know, it just keeps going on and on. We learn more and more, and it's all going to come out someday.
All right. Stanton Friedman and Catherine, oh, help me. Oh, she was on the show, too. Okay, we'll just say Stanton Friedman and his co-author wrote the book. Science Was Wrong. Excellent book. Have you read that?
I haven't heard of that one yet.
Yeah, Science Was Wrong, and it tells all these different things, not just UFOs, but all these different things where science said, you know, man will never fly, man will never reach the moon, you know, there'll never be a horseless carriage, doctors don't have to wash their hands before reaching into other people's bodies. It makes no difference, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of things like this. And, yeah, they keep finding out that 100 years ago they thought they knew everything. And today we look back 100 years and see how arrogant they were. And what's going to be happening 100 years from now?
Well, it's kind of like our own lives, isn't it? At 21 years old, we thought we knew everything, and then 40 years old, we found out what we really didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Like that sign that says, 16-year-olds, pack your bags and get out now while you still know everything.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. So where do you think this UFO phenomenon is going? Do you feel that we'll ever see disclosure, full disclosure, in our lifetime?
Well, I guess that's a loaded question because my lifetime isn't quite as long as a lot of other people or what I have left. I would like to see it in our lifetime. I think we're headed in that direction, and there are things in play that can help that. I certainly would like to see it,
mm-hmm.
Just to experience it.
Right.
But I think it has to come at some point so that we don't end up, you know, destroying ourselves.
Right. I always say that I think the E.T. is going to be the one that does the disclosure. You know, make it known on no uncertain terms.
I think that's what it takes, but there has to be a way not to scare the people. You know, Hollywood, everybody else wants to make this out like it's the enemy up there.
Yeah.
And we can be our own worst enemy by misuse of nuclear power and H-bombs and all that stuff. And I think one of the things they're trying to do here is to make sure that we don't go down that road again.
Yeah. But don't you think that entertainment, the Hollywood, and the government, and the stories that are coming out now, YouTube, they're letting this information slowly leak out. So kind of acclimate ourselves to the fact that this exists. At least young people, acclimate the young people, so
yes.
It won't be such a shock.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that it'll just become self-evident that this is a real phenomenon, and what are we going to do about it, you know?
Yeah, so. And then, you know, when the government can acknowledge it and acknowledge the fact that they've been working with this for the last couple of decades or last few decades, people will be more comfortable with it because it's more of a reality.
Right. Well, Michael, I'm afraid we're running out of time, but I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your very personal experience with us.
Well, it was my pleasure.
All right. And keep us safe out there, will you?
I will do my best. Thank you, Dave.
Okay, thank you once again, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, there's my music. I'm wondering where my music is. If our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at the WHFR.FM's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. And We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is UFOimplications.com. So please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.